Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
We just have to just stand up for the general idea of respectful treatment of women in the workplace.
Lieutenant Governor candidate Edie Grunwald drops out of the race. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, October 25th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, subsistence rights hinge on the definition of rural, but it's complicated.
No one can come to a universal agreement as to what the term rural community means.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
The running mate of Republican gubernatorial candidate and former Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor Charlie Pierce has dropped out of the race for lieutenant governor 4 days after Pierce was sued by a former assistant for sexual harassment. Edie Grunwald's name will still appear on the ballot next to Pierce's since the deadline to drop out of the race has passed. Pierce said by text today that he is not dropping out of the race. But Grunwald says she decided that she's no longer running alongside him.
My withdrawal is not a reflection of guilt or innocence. I really just have to just stand up for the general idea of respectful treatment of women in the workplace.
Grunwald says she's encouraging people to vote for incumbent Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy. Her decision comes days after Pierce's former executive assistant sued him for sexual harassment, and more than a month after the Kenai Peninsula Borough publicly confirmed for the first time there were credible workplace harassment claims made against Pierce. In the lawsuit, the assistant, Pamela Wastel, alleges the harassment from Pierce was constant over the year and a half she worked in his office. Pierce picked Grunwald, a retired Air Force colonel, to be his running mate in March. Grunwald lives in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough and ran as a Republican candidate for lieutenant governor in 2018. Dunleavy picked her to be chair of the Alaska Parole Board in 2019. She's been a victims' rights advocate since her 16-year-old son was kidnapped and killed in Palmer in 2016. Grunwald says she's not calling for Pierce to drop out and still believes he's done a lot to protect Alaskans' freedoms.
You know, that's a decision that he'll have to make. But for me, given the content of the report, let the courts work that out. And it's just a general statement for me that I support, the respectful treatment of women.
Grunwald says she has no direct knowledge of the instances alleged in the suit. Absentee ballots have already been mailed out and early voting started yesterday statewide. Governor Dunleavy is standing behind his decision to support Pierce as voters' second choice in the governor's race. In emails and text messages, Dunleavy spokesperson Andrew Jensen said the governor acknowledges the allegations against Pierce are serious, but that he's waiting for more facts to emerge. In a statement, the governor said, quote, "It would be inappropriate and unfair to all parties involved to make any snap judgments or draw any conclusions from a complaint filed just days ago," end quote. Pierce did not respond to a voicemail left on his cell phone. The two other candidates in the race, independent Bill Walker and Democrat Les Guerra, are calling on Pierce to drop out. Guerra says Dunleavy shouldn't need more proof.
You can't come any closer to knowing this is a legitimate sexual harassment claim than the city's own attorney saying that that the claims are credible. So I don't think the governor can hide behind this argument that he doesn't know what happened.
Walker says he's surprised Dunleavy hasn't distanced himself further from Pierce.
When you're in a position of power, I think you need to make sure that you're taking the high road on these things and sending a message. I mean, we're our state with the number one in the nation of domestic violence, sexual assault. I think you need to lead by example.
Dunleavy has encouraged voters to rank Pierce second in next month's election as recently as last week. access to traditional foods has long been a priority for Ketchikan's federally recognized tribe. But for decades, Ketchikan residents have been barred from taking part in federal subsistence hunts and fisheries. Now, Ketchikan Indian community is pushing to change that, and as KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, it hinges on one big question. Is Ketchikan a rural community?
Trixie Bennett, the president of Ketchikan's tribe, says the push to designate Ketchikan as a rural community is a major step towards the tribe's goal of food sovereignty.
Our food is our way of life. Our food is the medicine. Our culture is the medicine.
If Ketchikan was classified as rural, all residents, native and non-native, would be federally qualified subsistence hunters. That means they'd be able to hunt and fish on federal lands and harvest subsistence species like ooligan from the Unuk River. And wildlife officials would be required to prioritize the needs of Ketchikan subsistence users over commercial and sport fishermen.
We want just better access to our healthier foods around here, not just for us, but for everyone on the island.
She says traditional foods like deer and fish are high in protein, and that indigenous people have been living off the land since time immemorial.
But there's a reason that we've, you know, persevered and we're so resilient, and a lot of that has to do with your food system.
But what does it mean to be designated as a rural community? Matthew Newman from the Native American Rights Fund says that's decided by the Federal Subsistence Board.
It is the definition by which, you know, subsistence rights are either offered or denied. But no one can come to a universal agreement as to what the term rural community means.
If an area is considered rural by the board, it means more subsistence rights, like those outlined in Title VIII of the Alaska National Interests Lands Conservation Act.
In this instance, you also have, as a rural resident, you have the opportunity to hunt or fish under federal rules.
But Newman says there's no precise definition of what the board sees as rural. As of now, Ketchikan is listed as non-rural, along with Juneau, Fairbanks, the Matanuska-Susitna Borough, Anchorage, and the Kenai Peninsula. Notably, the community of Saxman, which lies within Ketchikan's borough and is connected to its road system, is considered rural by the board.
It's only by Alaska standards when anyone look at Ketchikan and say, well, that's not that rural.
In practice, redesignating Ketchikan as a rural community would allow residents to hunt and fish on more land and waters and increase bag limits. But on Prince of Wales Island, where there's widespread concern about deer populations, some aren't so sure opening the island to more hunting and fishing is a good idea. Earlier this month, wildlife and conservation agencies held a three-day summit to discuss the problems facing the island's dwindling deer population. Clinton Cook is the president of the Craig Tribal Association, but he spoke to KRBD in his personal capacity. Cook says he believes all small communities have a right to the designation, but he's not sure now is the right time.
So I think adding 10 more thousand people to the queue might not be what is best right now, especially with diminished salmon populations, diminished deer populations.
Cook doesn't think Ketchikan's tribe should stop pushing their request, but he says he wishes Prince of Wales Island tribes had been more involved in the request.
They should have been face-to-face with tribes on Prince of Wales and communities on Prince of Wales.
He says he's having a meeting with Ketchikan's tribe on the topic soon. Bennett, the president of Ketchikan's tribe, says Ketchikan hunters and anglers would still have to follow special guidelines depending on the status of the population at the time. And federal regulations mandate that if there aren't enough deer on Prince of Wales Island to feed out-of-town hunters, local residents would get priority. Ketchikan Indian Community's request faces its first test in the coming days as the Southeast Regional Subsistence Advisory Council meets in Ketchikan. But it'll be a while before any changes take effect. Bennett says it could take as long as 3 years to complete the process. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
The Alaska Department of Corrections says a 69-year-old man died in its custody on Sunday at Goose Creek Correctional Center in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. Paul Allen Harris is the 16th person to die this year in the department's custody, likely a 20-year high for deaths in a calendar year. The department does not suspect foul play and describes Harris's death as expected. The department says it can't release much information due to health privacy, security, and confidentiality policies. Harris was serving the seventh year of his sentence after a conviction on sexual abuse of a minor charges. Governor Mike Dunleavy was asked to address the high number of prison deaths on Saturday during the Alaska Federation of Natives convention. Dunleavy said investigations will likely show that health issues and suicides are to blame.
We're committed to taking care of the people in our care. Each death is going to be scrutinized very carefully. We're always looking to improve what we can do in corrections and across government. But we always have folks, unfortunately, that pass away in our care, in corrections. We always have.
Alaska state troopers investigate the deaths, and the state medical examiner determines the cause of death. The administration has not responded to a request from the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska for an independent investigation. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, activists in Petersburg work to prevent domestic violence.
We're trying to foster just a sense of community for people who need a sense of community, whether they are, you know, survivors or victims or not.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Voting in the general election? Here are key deadlines you need to know. First, in-person voting begins on October 24th. Want to vote absentee? You must request your ballot by October 29th. Last is Election Day. You must vote or submit your ballot by November 8th. Visit elections.alaska.gov to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Elections.
The Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race is dropping its COVID-19 vaccination requirement for mushers, staff, and volunteers in the 2023 race. The announcement comes as mushers have been slow to sign up for the 51st running of Iditarod, with only 26 listed as of today. But Iditarod spokeswoman Shannon Noonan says having fewer mushers signed up did not affect the decision to drop the vaccination requirement.
You know, dropping this policy may change that, but that was not a deciding factor of dropping the vaccination policy.
Last year, the Iditarod said requiring proof of vaccination was necessary to protect everyone along the trail. That included residents of remote communities serving as checkpoints where medical care is limited and an influx of people during the race could lead to an outbreak. Noonan says what's different now is COVID's declining trajectory in Alaska, and state and federal guidelines aren't recommending vaccination requirements for big events like the Iditarod.
We in no way are dropping the vaccine requirement, saying that COVID is over in any way. We are absolutely still have our villages and our mushers and our volunteers as the number one concern, and that we're going to continue asking and looking for input from our villages as we move forward to the race.
It's unclear if dropping the vaccination requirement will bring back mushers who cited the policy when they decided not to race the Iditarod in 2022. Five-time Iditarod finisher Monica Zappa of Kisilov has been skeptical of the vaccines and opposed the Iditarod's requirement. And while she said her decision not to race the past 2 years also involved the age of her dogs and the cost of maintaining a race kennel, Zappa says she's glad the race is dropping the requirement.
I mean, I'm not like begrudging, the race, but sometimes just in life in general, you kind of have to like let people be the controllers of themselves a little bit too.
Noonan with the Iditarod says race officials are still discussing protocols for COVID-19 testing during the race. In 2021 and 2022, a positive test meant mushers or staff had to leave the race. The Iditarod is set to start March 4th, 2023. In Juneau, there's a concerning lack of interest in running for local office or serving on the city boards and commissions that hold the community together. Is it possible that the pandemic has burned us all out, even on civic engagement? For at least one guy in town, the answer is not yet. KTOO's Jennifer Pemberton has his story.
In Alaska's small capital city, no one has challenged any of the seats on the city council or the school board this year. That wasn't the case last year. In the fall of 2021, there were 7 candidates vying for 2 seats on the local school board. The Delta wave of the pandemic was in full swing, masks were required at schools, and there was suddenly a lot of interest in local government. The candidates' Zoom debate was very contentious.
Forced masking, I'm against. I want parents
as
to make a decision.
As pandemics go, this one is not historically as threatening as, say, the Spanish flu or swine flu.
Let's just say it needed a lot of fact-checking.
The bubonic plague of the 1300s. I have a problem.
Juneau resident Will Muldoon was listening to the debate that night. He didn't like what he heard.
I was at home watching the football game, and 25 people called me encouraging me to run. And so that kind of felt like the critical mass for me.
So he launched a write-in campaign for the school board less than 2 weeks before the election. And he won. It was the first time someone in Juneau had won any election as a write-in in almost 30 years. Will Muldoon works as a data analyst for the state of Alaska. He's single and he doesn't have kids, but he really likes meetings.
I have adopted a highway here and I'm required to be on a safety committee for that. I am also on the Disability Law Center.
And he's kind of a civic engagement superhero.
I'm the chair of the Aquatics Board. I'm the vice chair of the Parks Board. And I am the facilities chair for the Board of Education. So six total. That's a lot. Probably too many.
The school board takes the most time and energy, though.
The one thing I really didn't fully consider was just how much of your life it takes over.
There are the meetings, of course, but there's also homework between the meetings and hours of reading emails each week from parents. People don't usually write in to tell board members they're doing a good job. The tone is often less than civil.
I spend the time every night reading the emails, and that's been, it's tough because I think with schools in particular, I feel personally that it's not my job to tell people how to raise their kids or even really have an opinion on that.
But it is his job to help make policies informed by the public on the school's role in their kids' lives. So he answers the phone, he responds to the emails, he engages. People often ask him if he enjoys serving on the school board.
Enjoy is never the word I'm going to use in my top five adjectives.
But he thinks the work is valid and important, and he's still enthusiastic about recommending that other people run for local office, too. He was bummed when no one ran against him or anyone else for a seat on the school board this year.
It's been a difficult year. Like, I get choked up thinking about it. But I also wish I was more eloquent in conveying the enrichment and the fulfillment that comes with that.
The stipend for that work in Juneau is $270 a month. It's a pretty thankless job, as is serving on any city board or commission as a volunteer or even as an elected official. But all of these roles are mission critical for democracy. And Muldoon's advice is always going to be to go for it, even if you lose. He ran for school board twice before he won last year, the first time when he was 18 years old and still in school himself.
I wish that people would run and not be afraid to lose, because losing is not fun that night. It's not fun that week, but it isn't fatal. And if your end goal is to be engaging and advocating for the things that you believe in, losing's a real good door opener for that.
In Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you are experiencing domestic violence or feel unsafe, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is here for you. Call 1-844-762-8483 or visit strongheartshelpline.org. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. The IBEW is the union of skilled hands and generous hearts, hardworking people on the job and off. It's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. This message sponsored by the IBEW Local 1547. If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience. Your future is in your hands, whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level. Discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
In early October, voters on the Kenai Peninsula passed a $65 million bond to fund deferred maintenance at public schools across the district. But one critical project was notably missing from that package, a plan to build a new school in the Russian Old Believer community of Ketchumak Selo. The school has long been in a dilapidated state, and the district has been pursuing a match for a state grant to build a new school for years. But as KDLL's Riley Board reports, the district will have the funds it needs to build a new school.
Made up of three buildings in the small Old Believer village at the southern end of the Kenai Peninsula's road system, the Ketchumak Selo School is difficult to access. Getting there requires driving on a dirt trail and on the beach, which the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District says has limited maintenance there in the past. As a result, the school's buildings are deep in disrepair. District Superintendent Clayton Holland says one of the buildings is in such bad condition that students can't go inside in the winter because there are holes in the ceiling and snow gets inside. He says that's a real problem, and something voters on the more populated parts of the peninsula might not see.
We have students across this whole vast district, and every one of them is ours. They're all ours. They all impact us. You're on the peninsula, we're all one, and we always have to remember that.
10 years ago, the K-Celo community, as it's known, petitioned the district to build an entirely new school. And the district was awarded a $10 million grant from the state to do so 5 years later, on the condition that it would put up a $5 million match. Borough voters turned down a bond to finance that match in 2018. Holland says the Borough Assembly and then-Mayor Charlie Pierce considered including K-Celo in the most recent bond package back in 2021, but decided against it because they worried the bond wouldn't pass with K-Celo on it. Instead of putting a bond to voters, the borough dipped into its own pockets, putting aside $3 million from its budget to rebuild the school.
During the course of this past year, they did come forward and say with the redesign that they'd be in favor of moving forward.
The school district and borough put out a bid for an architect last year and commissioned a new design for the school to make it smaller and more affordable than previous plans. The new school, for example, will be just one building. With those changes, Holland says the borough has been more supportive.
Mayor Pierce, the assembly agreed to keep moving forward, basically paying out of pocket, you know, from the borough funds rather than bring it forward to the voters again, which they felt would be defeated.
Holland says he hasn't heard any pushback to the new funding plan for K-Celo. However, he says a widely misunderstood aspect of the issue is that the district does have the responsibility to provide a school for the community. Holland says he's heard comments in the past suggesting that K-Celo community members just homeschool their children or send them to virtual school. He says the school district cannot require parents to homeschool their children, and because the internet is unreliable in K-Celo and the Russian Old Believer communities generally don't use as much technology in their culture, those are not viable options. But on top of that, he says the district has certain legal obligations.
Currently, they are considered unhoused students because of the design, and we do have an obligation to build a building there, and I don't know if people realize all of that.
There isn't a timeline yet for the project. Just this past week, core samples were taken at the prospective site of the school to determine if building will be possible there. Those results have not come back yet. Holland says if the borough can find a suitable location, it may be able to break ground by next summer. When it comes to the other projects funded by the bond package, some are kicking off this coming spring and summer. The borough will sell the bonds as soon as January. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
October is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and in Petersburg, a local organization working against violence for everyone, or WAVE, asked people in town to wear purple on October 20th. As KFSK's Rachel Cassandra reports, the visibility event highlighted the resources available for survivors of domestic abuse.
I found three people from WAVE speedwalking around on the streets of downtown Petersburg. There was a cheerful, frenetic energy to their purple group as they tried to take photos of as many people as possible waving purple flags.
Here we go. We're doing a horseshoe.
We're going down the road.
That's Sarah Hofstetter. She's on the board of WAVE. Hofstetter told me they'd already visited 7 businesses and received many donations.
It's like a mad rush from store to store. We make sure we take the picture, and if they give us some money, that's a positive too. And our goal today is $2,022. We feel close already.
They walked up to the Harbor Bar. First, you'll hear the voice of Alina Nelson. She's a prevention advocate for WAVE.
I don't know if they're open yet.
The door's not open.
Okay, say hi. Okay.
I did drop off.
They're taking photos of Jessica Josie, the bartender.
Awesome. Thanks, Jess.
The photos are part of Wave for Wave, which is an annual event. It's a day they hope highlights domestic violence awareness. And it's a way to open the door to people reaching out when they do need help. I sat down with Ajana Ware the next day to talk about Wave's work.
My name is Ajana Ware. I am the prevention coordinator at WAVE.
Ware works a lot with youth on prevention. She visits schools throughout the year for education about relationships.
It's primarily about, you know, consent and what consent is and, you know, what a healthy and unhealthy relationship might look like and things that, you know, can kind of be grazed over, especially emotional abuse, which a lot of people don't really recognize, and financial abuse, which a lot of people don't really recognize, and then communication and effective forms of communication if you do feel like your boundaries are being crossed.
Recently, some kids told Ware that they were seen bullying in schools.
There was a student that came up to me, and they were just talking to me about how in the middle school there's a lot of instances of bullying, especially for, you know, queer kids and kids of color, and there's just not an appreciation for kids who are not, who don't fit a certain look or personality type or aren't involved in sports or anything like that.
So Ware started Unity, which is a youth-led club teaching kids about diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's meant to be a safe space for all kids, whatever their identity. It's anti-bullying and kids can share their experiences.
There were way more students that showed up than what I was expecting, you know, but it was really, it's been awesome. It's been really awesome.
Ware talked with me about some of Wave's other new programs. Wave wants to be more than just a resource for those with an active crisis.
We're trying to foster just a sense of community for people who need a sense of community, whether they are, you know, survivors or victims or not, whether they're in a safe home or not, it doesn't matter.
They've been offering free mindful movement classes and a stitch and bitch for crafters. As of Friday, Wave was still counting their donations for the Wave for Wave event. Reporting in Petersburg, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Sabine Pooks and Riley Board in Kenai, Kavitha George and Jeremy Shea in Anchorage, Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, Jennifer Pemberton in Juneau, and Rachel Cassandra in Petersburg. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby. Annie Fight produced tonight's show, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. If you are experiencing domestic violence or feel unsafe, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is here for you. Call 1-844-762-8483 or visit strongheartshelpline.org. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.